Welcome to Excuse My ADHD, a podcast for adults with or who think they may have ADHD. I'm your host, Jeanette, and this is my journey. Hello, and welcome to Excuse My ADHD, episode number 40. With special guest Russ Germain of Living with ADHD and CPTSD podcast. I'm your host, Jeanette, and I am navigating ADHD one distraction at a time. This is part two of my interview with Russ Germain, so if you haven't listened to part one, go check it out. If you're a first-time listener, thanks for tuning in, and if you're a returning listener, thanks for coming back. Now let's get into it.
It's like, why can't things just be easy?
Exactly.
And I used to remember growing up, you know, just it always felt like everybody had things so much easier. Like the kids at school, they could study.
Yeah.
It's like, and I was always like, how can you just sit there and study? I can't do that. It was so hard. Like so many things in school, especially, were just so hard. And even, you know, still now it's like, being a mom and then seeing all these moms do all of these things. And it's just kind of like, how are you doing that? Like, I can't even fathom doing half of that. It exhausts me to think about it.
Yeah.
And it's just so frustrating. And then you see, I guess I see all these, I don't know. I just always felt like things were so much harder. And then once I got the diagnosis, it's like it finally made sense that, okay, I'm not just broken. I'm just different.
Yeah.
And there are other people that have it that struggle too. It's like there are other people that have a hard time remembering to do the dishes or can't sit down and study for hours on end to pass a test or that can be Pinterest moms. It's just like, but that's okay. Yeah. And coming to terms with that being okay is like huge. But then there's still, we still struggle with things like this because all of that is always there.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a link to everything when you look at it from afar, right? The ADHD is the root of everything, you know, like for those who it is, like it's legitimately ADHD is the root. And then you look at things like rejections, like RSD, and you look at stress and trauma and high anxiety levels, and you can put them all together. You can match them up and you see where it comes from. 'Cause you know, a person with ADHD who is not diagnosed and thinks, what the hell is wrong with me? Why is this happening?
It's like ADHD is like the catalyst for all of these other things.
Yeah. Yeah. And exactly. So you got one or two other people constantly on you and saying, why can't you do this? Why are you always messing up? Why do you always make mistakes? Why can't you be like your brother? Or why can't you?
Oh, God.
And next thing you know, you're going, yeah. And then you, but in no time, you're suddenly developing this fear of rejection. And it not only is it extremely anxiety, creates so much anxiety and stress, it gets to the point where you would rather not do anything.
Like make the phone calls.
Yeah.
It's like one of the things I think a lot of us struggle with is doing simple tasks, like making phone calls or sending emails. And I think a lot of that stems from that history of always messing things up and not wanting to deal with it.
Yeah.
And even though it seems simple, I don't know if you know who Brendan Mahan is, but he has this whole thing. He does, what is his podcast called? I can't remember what it's called, but ADHD Essentials. That's what it is.
But
he talks about the wall of shame and how we build this wall of shame brick by brick through our lives. based on our experiences that we have with our ADHD. And by the time we're adults, we've built this wall. And every time we have to do a task, it's like we have to go through the wall. So you have choices. You can go through it. You can go over it. But until you deal with everything and you deal with all of that shame and all of those other things, all of those tasks are going to always be hard. And they're because they're going to be tied to all of that, those years of bad experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Until you can deal with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's amazing how when you can see it and you can understand and, you know, you can take that step back and look at it. It's it you start to finally really see and understand it. Because
I think that is one of the things.
Time.
Yeah. Because it's like, I know, I'm sure you've probably experienced the same as I did, that once I got diagnosed, then I started researching it and actually learning about what ADHD was, because my idea of it was completely skewed and stereotypical of that little boy in the classroom that couldn't sit still, because that's what I was always told. But once I started reading and started researching, you know, I had no idea what executive functions were, never heard of it before. And then I started deep diving into all of these things and learning about them. It was like this awakening. And then you can step back and kind of reevaluate your entire life and how all of those symptoms and all of those things played out. And you can just, you can see it. It's like, okay, this is where I can see where my executive functions weren't working for me in school. This is why I struggled. It's why it took me 10 years to get my bachelor's degree. It's why I switched majors 5 times, you know?
Right.
It's why I went part-time and could never do full-time. And all of these things just started to make so much more sense. But until you start to understand it more, I think you just struggle so much more with it. And
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody's story is slightly different into, you know, in some ways. But it's the same kind of storyline, you know, or step by step. Like I know I looked when I started to understand and I got diagnosed and it confirmed what I felt. I definitely did the research, and I also kept looking back at my past and trying to remember situations that happened in my life, and then sitting down and going, okay, this is why, like, you know, this explains it. This is why I had such a hard time with friends, right? Like maintaining friendships. And then this is why I had such a hard time being even willing to try and date somebody or having the courage to partake in extracurricular activities. Or it's because my lack of abilities to regulate my emotions and to think and then hyper focusing, and like I still do it. Even though in conversations with people where I get so stuck and so into something or like if I'm talking about myself, that even when the person attempts to kind of change the subject or talk about themselves, I hear it, but I'm not doing anything, or I'm not acknowledging, or I'm not going, hey, it's time to kind of take a break or let them talk or anything. You get so into it.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, the person's looking at you going, are you ever going to shut up? Right.
Or and then we don't always pick up on those cues. And then later we're like, oh God, did I overshare? Do they hate me now?
Yeah. I don't know how many times I had a first meeting with somebody, like a woman or, you know, a potential date, and talk. And when they would say something, I would, instead of going, oh, right, okay, and then maybe asking a follow-up question, it would be like, oh, yeah, and then going right back into it. And then thinking, oh, that went great. And next, yep. And then the next day it's like, oh, we don't have any chemistry. It just like, they wouldn't tell the truth. They would just try to, you know, make up a nice way of saying it. And until I finally understood, I couldn't figure, you know, I could never figure out why was I always having so many problems? Why could it, you know, I would always think it was working, but the other person never agreed and I never got anywhere. And suddenly now it would make sense. Yeah. It's just, you get so hyper-focused and you're trying to talk and you're trying to listen, but I can't do both. Mm-hmm. Because the second I stop talking, if I don't think about what I want to say, I'm going to listen. Sure, I can listen really great, yeah. But I can't separate my thoughts from trying to remember or to listen. And that mm-hmm. was just a bad sign of ADHD. And I had no idea. I just thought I like to talk.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, when you were talking about having a hard time regulating your emotions growing up, like there are times that I remember being with family and we played pinochle. My family is big pinochle players. But I had one experience where I guess I had a really good hand, but I thought it was a bad hand. And then so they were making fun of me because I thought it was a bad hand and said that we had to quit the game and start over. But I had the best hand that anybody had. I have not played a game of pinochle since.
Wow.
Because my emotions got so crazy and I couldn't control them. And then that stuck with me, that shame from playing. I've never been able to play again.
That's, yeah, I can totally see how that.
Because it was like, it was my whole family there.
Yeah.
And so when everybody's laughing and then you're mortified, it multiplies it. And I remember running off and just crying because I was so ashamed and so embarrassed.
Wow.
And they still talk about it.
Yeah.
And so I still don't play.
I know. I can see how that. Yeah, I get that. I think I had an opposite issue. because of my lack of emotional regulation, I have a hard time enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like I get too into. Like especially if we're playing a game, it doesn't, and if it, even if it's a four people, everybody, right. I, instead of enjoying it and having a good time and laughing and whatever, it's like, I was so focused on what was happening.
Yeah.
Sure. I would do great. I was really good. Right. I think the best examples were playing charades, right? Like mm-hmm. everybody doing your thing. And I was always so good at figuring out what was being done or the actions, and I could always guess and our teams would always win, and they're always like, oh my God, how are you getting these? And yet I would never, it's like all the other stuff, all that extracurricular activity and the chattiness and the there's a word for it, the social aspect. It's like I was avoiding, not avoiding it, but I was missing out on it completely because I was so focused on the concept of, or the, you know, what I'm doing that I could not do other.
You couldn't other actually aspects. Enjoy being with everybody. You were so focused on what you were doing. You couldn't have fun and enjoy everybody's company.
Yeah. And it's, I think that was happening with everything. I'd go bowling and my focus would be so much on the bowling that it'd be almost like I would be sitting there just kind of maybe saying a few words, but there'd be no talking. There'd be very little interaction with anybody. And all I would think about is, how am I going to throw the ball the next round to get a better score?
Yeah.
It's just, there's, and that was because I had I couldn't regulate, and I couldn't, and it was, it's like I was so hyper-focused on, mm-hmm. on the analytical, the logic part of it that
right.
I had no social skill. I had no social ability. And then there was a lot of it was fear part, like being afraid of messing it up or saying something wrong. So it was almost like a hiding behind the activity. And,
yeah.
But you don't know, I didn't have a clue what was going on.
Yeah. It's so strange how that works. Like until somebody tells you,
yeah,
okay, this is what you have. This is what's going on.
Yeah.
You don't realize all of those quirks. Like, you know, there's something. At least for me, I always knew something was different. I always felt different. Like you were talking about, like fitting with friends, not having very many friends. I was always jealous of yeah. friend groups of like four or five people. I would always have one or two friends, but then they would have right. other friends. And then I would be jealous of their relationships with their other friends, or the fact that, you know, if we were in a group, I never felt like I fit in that group. Even when, you know, they would talk to me and include me, I just never felt like I fit in. And it was a lot of that and all of the other things. And then having that diagnosis just made everything make sense and click. And it's just, it makes you yeah. see your life in a different way.
Oh, for sure.
But I think the one thing you have to be careful of, at least for me, was the woulda, coulda, shoulda beens.
Yeah.
What if I had been diagnosed earlier? What if my parents had gotten me help? What if my teachers had said anything? I could have gone to school and gotten that law degree I wanted. I could have become that marine biologist. I could have finished school earlier. I could have done better in high school. Yeah. You know, all of mm-hmm. these things. And it's, if you get stuck in that, can be really damaging, because that depression yeah. can kick in hard, and it hit me hard for a while. It took me a while to, because I was mad. I think I went through the whole cycle of grief after I was diagnosed. The denial, it took me three doctors to finally say, okay, yes, this is what it is. And I was mad. I was mad at my teachers. I was mad at my doctors. I was mad at my parents. I was mad mm-hmm. at everybody. I was mad at my psychiatrist that didn't catch on to it. I was so mad for so long. And then finally, after I was mad, I was sad, and then I accepted everything. And it's made things so much easier just to accept and move on and kind of try and focus on the future. But I feel like that is something that can be very dangerous if you're not careful.
Right. It makes sense. Absolutely. Because that's all you think about.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no, and you can't change it. And that's the part that makes you angry, is that you want to change it. You wish you could, but you can't do anything about it.
Yep.
But you don't want to accept that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
It's like, if only they had done this, this wouldn't have been so hard. Mm-hmm. And then even still, sometimes I get jealous of people. I'll see people on TikTok that, you know, have been diagnosed and how they're doing so great with X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, I hate you. Mm. Happy for you, but I hate you at the same time, because that's not how it went for me. Yeah. I wish it had, but it's not how it went. And it's just I don't know. I feel like people who were diagnosed early, who had people that were there for them, that knew that paid attention and watched out for them, don't realize how lucky they were.
Mm-hmm. No kidding.
They don't realize how lucky they were.
Yeah, I know. I agree. It, yeah, there's, oh, I could probably fill hours with examples.
Yeah.
Just thinking of the, and having another one come up and go, oh, right, yes, I read now mm-hmm. this one. And, you know, yep. like, I think my biggest issue for the longest time was just thinking about, like, seeing something on TV or hearing or like observing some a couple having a nice moment, and my first thoughts are, and it would never fail. It was always, I wish I could have that nice moment.
Yeah.
And yet it would kind of, you know, make me jealous, and it would make me upset, because it would immediately go back to me going, why do I have this? Why, you know, why can't I get rid of this? This is holding me back, because I can't do these things. I can't think that way. I can't act that way. And it drives me crazy because I see something that almost feels like I'm not allowed to have that.
Yeah.
Because of what is holding, like, what I have, what is holding me back.
Yeah.
And it, you know, I don't know some days what to think. And
yeah, sometimes I get, yeah. I'll see people make light of it and joke about it. And on the one hand, I'm like, yeah, it's good that you can do that, because it can be so heavy. But at the same time, I'm like, that's kind of dangerous, because ADHD and Ed Halliwell talks about how dangerous it is, especially when you have, and so does Dr. Barkley, especially inattentive. I mean, it can be life-changing, and not in a good way.
Yeah.
You think about all of the people, car accidents.
Yeah, that's a big one. That is huge when it comes to people with ADHD.
I mean, if fires, accidental fires, I mean, there are just so many instances where ADHD can be life shattering, and people don't think about that. They just think about, oh, take your medicine, you'll be fine. But that's not all it is. It's not all about the focus. It's not just about that one aspect. And I think there's a lot of misinformation. And I think that's like things like emotional regulation and RSD don't get considered a lot until recently. I think is maybe within maybe the last 5 years, it's really become more prominent. And it's not even in the DSMV as an actual symptom.
Yeah.
Which is frustrating, because I feel like it's probably one of the largest components.
Yeah. And Barkley talks about that
all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's crazy, because they all look at these, at the classic symptoms, the ones that they thought of back in the day when it was first started.
Right.
They always think about, he can't focus. He always forgets. He can't sit still. They run around and they're always doing like weird things that everybody else goes, what was that about? But they never think about the other aspects of it, about the emotional side and like the struggles with, you know, with emotions and with functions and making choices.
Time management, short-term memory. You know how many times I've made a list and taken it to the grocery store and had the list in front of me and marked things off, but still did not get everything on my list? Or went in with just three things and couldn't remember all three of them? Or went, got 50 things, and none of them were what were on my list.
Right.
I mean,
it
affects so many different aspects. But the fact that probably the largest, debilitating is the emotional side of it. And the fact that the emotions, especially in puberty, become so erratic, that's when the symptoms usually are at their highest. It gets brushed off as puberty. Or, they're just going through adolescence. Instead of, wait a second, maybe these things from before, this is what's really going on, and we're just now really seeing it. Because my grades and stuff didn't start to suffer until right around then.
Right.
And that's when I started having my all of my problems. Was like between 5th and 8th grade. That's when everything really kicked up for me.
Wow. I know, that's tough. It's, you can, there are certain things that you can definitely pinpoint and say, this is when I first started it, or when I first noticed. Like, I had a conversation with my therapist, I think it was probably a week or two after we talked, and it hadn't really come up before, and it was all to do with emotions. And the reason it came up is because there was this discussion that the two of us, my girlfriend and I, had about the lack, like, to do with emotional regulation and the lack of having any ability to express it or to feel it. And I remember saying to myself, like, I can't remember exactly how we got to it, to the specific area, but he asked me a question as to, what age do you remember things starting to change? Like, where you were feeling like you could express your emotions and you had fun and you felt good and you could feel sadness and anger and excitement. And it was obvious to them, all of a sudden it started to go away, or it felt like you couldn't do it, or it was too much of an effort, or you keep feeling like you think you're being excited, or you think you're being calm and someone's thinking you're being angry, or you're having a tone, and you're going, what? That can't be.
Or getting so mad that you cry for no reason. It's like, I would get so angry and so mad that I would just cry uncontrollably. And it would turn into these hysterics that I couldn't stop. Like, I would be, like, I'm good, but I can't stop all of this that's pouring out of me. It won't stop.
Right.
And then there would be other times where I would just be numb and I had no emotion about it at all. And I mean, that's it. You're not in control of it.
Yeah.
So then you don't know how your reactions are going to be, because you're not having normal reactions. They're either way up here or way down here. You're never really kind of like normal up and down fluctuations. You're way extreme.
Yeah, absolutely. That is definitely a sign of it. Like, or one of the symptoms, I should say. Is that extreme on either end. Yeah. The one thing I wasn't sure about was every time any sort of situation in daily life or in a major situation would occur, whether it was like disaster or like something really bad happening or really, really good, or something that was super sad, my instinct, rather than allow myself to feel it and to, you know, to take it in and understand or know that's a really sad, unfortunate problem or situation or thing that happened, my automatic response or go-to was to think about it and analyze it.
Yeah.
And to kind of ponder and come up with explanations or reasonings or this is why, rather than just, okay, it's happened.
Yeah.
Let's deal with it. And it was always the case. And so something really like the potential of the relationship ending, or seeing her crying and being upset, and instead of responding with emotion or empathy, it would be me trying to analyze the situation. Why I did this? Why did I do it? Why can't I not stop? Or, you know, and it was like I could never just be there, like never let it be. And it was always thinking, always. And it was it was its way of like dissociating, I guess you could say, instead of facing it.
But that dissociation is more of like a trauma response, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Big so time. I mean, I've done that a lot. Yeah. I've got a lot. Yeah, that's a lot that you're overlap. And
yeah,
I do a lot of dissociation, too, especially when I look back on things that happened when I was younger. And then being in, if I get into too much of an emotional situation, I think that's where a lot of the numbness comes in. Is that dissociation. If it's too much, then I just shut down. And makes the emotions sense. Go off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know that. That's a common
thing. And like thing feeling like I'm outside of myself, looking at the situation from outside. It's odd, but at the same time, I've done it for so long. It just feels normal.
Exactly. It's all the time, every single time. You don't even think about it. You don't go, how should I respond? It happens.
You're there. And then all of a sudden you're there, but you're not.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's that coping mechanism.
Yeah. The thing that I'm getting from everything that we've talked about so far, I'm seeing how I can see how they can't fix it they can help. There's medication, there's different techniques that you can use to help yourself. And then dealing with, if the trauma is involved, there's dealing with the trauma. But I can see from a psychiatrist or a psychologist's point of view or an expert, how there's just the threads that come out of it. Like all the going
this way. It's like a very intricate spider web.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how I kind of think about it. And especially when you have a complex diagnosis like you do, like I do.
Yeah.
And then you have the trauma in there. It's almost like you can't really deal with anything else until you deal with the trauma. Yeah. It's like the trauma is like the apex. And everything else just kind of is around it. But I think until the trauma is dealt with, the rest of it is going to be harder. You can try and deal with anxiety, but if you don't deal with the trauma, the anxiety is going to come back, or the depression is going to come back.
Yes.
And you can deal with the ADHD, but the trauma is going to up your symptoms, regardless if you're on medication or if you're not. And then things like your short-term memory and being distracted, your ADHD symptoms also prevent you from taking your medication all the time like you're supposed to, like a good little normal person, which drives me insane. It's like, why do they only give you a 30-day supply of your medication when you can't even remember to take it on a daily basis? But anyway, that's something else. But
yeah.
Ugh. And then that pulls into it, and it's just, it's complex. And that's the only way you can really describe it, is it's just this complex interwoven spider web that you pull on one string and the rest of them shake too.
Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. Absolutely. Yeah.
They just all, yeah.
Yeah. Like
it's not a one solution for everything. It's you need to eat the right foods for your brain. You need to exercise for your dopamine. You need to take your meds to help with your reuptake. You need to do your meditation that you can't do because you can't quiet your brain, but you need to do it because it'll quiet your brain. You know?
Yeah.
It's a combination. It's not ever going to be a one thing is a magic cure all. And the one thing about ADHD is you're going to have to constantly change your plan because you're going to get bored with it and you're going to stop doing it.
Yeah.
Because that's what we do. We get bored with things and then they don't work.
100%.
Like,
I agree.
I was on, I had everything figured out. And for 2 years, I was in the best shape of my life. I had things, I was the best organized I'd ever been. And then COVID hits and everything goes to crap. And now it's like, I can't get back there because none of those things that worked before are working again. I have to find different things to do, different tools. And it's a constant struggle.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I, yeah, it is. It is. So one last thing here before I end this show, it's kind of a question, and I want your opinion and the thought on this. Of the people, especially more today, so more so today because of the understanding of mental health compared to 20 years ago. Of the people who are diagnosed with ADHD, how many of them do you think at the same time are dealing with trauma? And I don't mean like a single event. I'm talking like repetitive trauma from their childhood friends or their classmates or their parents or their siblings.
I would say if they're undiagnosed until later in life and not diagnosed when they're younger, still in school, still able to fix that.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say close to 100% of us have some kind of trauma from that. I mean, not everybody's going to have the same level of it.
Yeah.
But look at, there's like 30% of the population that are incarcerated right now that have undiagnosed mental health illnesses, ADHD. Think about how many people self-medicate with heroin, with cocaine, with so many, you know, alcohol, all of these things because they're undiagnosed and they don't know how to get help. They don't know what's wrong with them. And it's depression and anxiety and trauma and ADHD. And that's how they deal with it. And all of those self-medication strategies, they get there because of trauma, because of shame, because of fear of failure, because they feel unworthy or unloved or not good enough, or because that's how they've been made to feel. They're outcasts. They don't fit in anywhere. They, I mean, just with my own experience, I always felt like an outcast. No matter how I belonged with people or how I fit in with people, I just always felt other or outside. Like I knew something was different, but I didn't know what.
Yeah.
And constantly being told things like, I know you're better than this. This isn't you. Look, why can't you be more like your brother, more like your sister? Why can't you do this? Why aren't you living up to your potential? Why did you do this? We don't know why we do the things that we do half of the freaking time.
Yeah.
Because we have no damn impulse control. And then you just have this immense amount of shame. And again, back to this, you know, the wall of shame that you build up. And I would venture that there is probably not one person that's diagnosed later in life that doesn't have some kind of trauma from that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I wish I could remember my earlier years clearer. Like I have vague memories of it, but I really wish I could, because I could narrow down a lot more, because I deal with trauma today, and I deal with like fear of rejection and fear of I am always freezing up and I'm always fawning with people because I want to please them and I want to make them happy to avoid having them add or angry at me or hate me or not want to deal with me. But then I look back and it all, a lot of it, I'm not saying all, but a lot of it originates from the way I was like behaviors, my behaviors, my inability to regulate or to stubbornness, all sorts of little things that were playing in when I was a really young kid that.
Oh yeah. Impulsivity got me in so much trouble. And if that was one of the primary symptoms of ADHD, and that was well known back then, somebody would have tagged me for sure.
Absolutely.
Because that's where all my trouble came in. But like you, the memories that I do have of childhood are primarily of the trauma.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember all of the good times that I had. I have very spotty memories except for the big trauma events for me.
Right.
Where kids chase after me after school and threw a board in my back or hit me with a tobacco stick right behind my house. And I remember the police coming, and I remember being in a fight with girls after school right at the bus where the buses were. And never fitting in with people and not understanding why they didn't like me, you know?
Right.
And then the event, like sitting at the table trying to do math with my dad. So many of us, I know, have that, whether you have ADHD or not, that homework trauma, that math homework trauma. But, it's the one thing that always, you're not living up to your potential. I know you're better than this. You can do better than this. And it was always, I'm trying, but it was never good enough. And so those are the things that stick out to me. I have very few good memories about achievements in school. And the only, I have in ninth grade, I had the highest GPA in science.
Nice.
But I only remember that because I have the physical medal and the certificate. I don't actually remember getting it or being told that I was getting it or my parents' reaction. I don't remember any of that. And the only reason I have a memory of that, it's not even really a memory. It's just a fact from a piece of paper and physical things that I have.
Right. Jeez. I understand, because that's a lot like the way it is for me. If I think about a certain year or a certain situation in school, it's the first thing that always pops up is a negative memory.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you think about the person that always teased you, or that you could never get along with, or you think about a teacher and your first thought is the teacher looking at you with this look of, oh my God, why does he act this way? Why can't he just, you know, like listen more? Or why does he always have to talk about something? Like, it's never, oh, that teacher thought you were a great kid with, you know, a nice personality with, it was always helpful and always had fun. No, it was always the negative part of it that always comes up. And so you're reinforcing to yourself that your experiences were the negative ones. And I literally have to either have something spark, like you said, like your medal is what helps you to remember that. I either see pictures of good times or something suddenly sparks a memory of a good event and I feel good about it. But remembering the details and everything about it is so much harder than if somebody says, oh, remember when you got in trouble and you had to go to the office.
It's like, I remember what I was wearing and where I was at and a light bulb was out in the ceiling and I went on a girls' trip with my family, you know, my cousin and my aunt and my sister back in April. And my aunt was she's only 4 years older than me. So we were all kind of relatively the same age. Mm-hmm. And she was asking me if I remembered this story from when I was younger. And she recalled all of these details and nothing. Mm. Nothing. but my aunt, my sister remembered, my cousin remembered nothing. I had nothing. They were all looking at me like, oh my God, I can't believe you don't remember that. There's a lot I don't remember. There's a lot that I don't remember. But then I'll remember random crap. Like the name of this actor in this movie who's married to so-and-so in this other movie. And it's so crazy.
Yeah. Jeez. I know. It's interesting. It's almost wish you could study that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure somebody is somewhere.
Probably.
Wow. Yeah. I hope in the future, whether it's through technology or just a better understanding or somehow that mental health and the understanding of how the brain functions mm-hmm. is going to be better understood, and the acceptance in general. Yeah. Like we're so far away. You think there's been a lot of progress made, and yet when you really think about it, it's probably 10, maybe 20% of what's capable still.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I think the one thing that I wish more than anything was that there was some kind of screening process for kids in school, an accurate screening process for kids in school to be able to catch these things when they're young.
Yeah.
So they don't have to have that trauma, those experiences, all of those things that we had to go through. Nobody should have to be that resilient.
No.
You shouldn't have to be that resilient. You shouldn't have to go through that much struggle.
Absolutely not.
And then to have resources to help them.
Absolutely. I think the one good thing about today and even in the next 5 to 10 years is with more people having a diagnosis in one form or mm-hmm. another, they're going to have children and they're going to have a different view of this. So instead of it being like with my dad or with my father's dad, the way that they felt and the way that mm-hmm. they believed things were and how they responded, like hopefully the generation after me, because you know I'm already screwed. But, like when you think about it, like the kids, my youngest siblings cousins who are now just starting to become adults and have parents that are doing it the right way instead of not listening to them and not acknowledging their emotions and their fears and their concerns, they are doing the things that are required. And that child has a much better chance of growing up with a healthy lifestyle and has a better chance of dealing with situations like being in school and having one of their classmates is different, like whether it's physically or mentally.
Yeah.
And instead of them being teased and being made fun of and being thought of as different, there's the understanding of, hey, this is the reason, and the teachers and everybody understands, and they're accepted and they're not looked at as different or treated in a different way because, you know, we got to treat this person so that they don't feel left out. It's just acceptance, but it's taking an older generation. I hate to say it, but it's taking an older generation to die away with a new generation where the understanding and the teaching and the way that they handle these sort of situations is going to be easy and better and the right way of doing it. Like, I hate to say it, but it's going to be, well, not my kids because I don't have any, but other people's grandchildren are going to be the ones that are going to be the first to finally go, we need to have as much funding for mental health as we do for our bloody military.
Yep. Exactly.
Instead of, right? Like, and then the acceptance and the understanding of it and making it available to everybody, not just the wealthy or the ones that have benefits or, you know, like everybody should have the ability to have it. Yeah. And it's going to take a future generation or the ones that are just starting to grow up to make the change, because they're the ones that are going to see the seriousness of this and how it affects society.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And until that happens, unfortunately, we're still going to be behind and we're struggling to catch up.
Yep.
Yeah, it sucks, but that's reality. That's just the reality.
I mean, you look at it, we're getting through generations where mental health was just not talked about.
Yes.
So we're really behind and we're playing catch up. And there are still people that don't accept mental illness as a thing, a real thing.
Yeah.
Or understand the severity of it. So it's going to take time for, like you said, it'll take a couple generations.
I don't like it, but that's just the reality of it.
Yeah.
There's so many examples out there that show that that's just the way it is, unfortunately.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. But, well, that's it. I know we could keep going.
But, I know. It's like an hour and 44 minutes later. Yeah, it looks like.
Pretty,
and it's like
pretty good episode length.
Okay. We probably need make this 2 episodes just so people will listen.
Yeah, no kidding. I may have to do that. Yes. All right. Well, Jeanette, thank you for coming on to the show. I really appreciate having you here. And it was very informative and a lot of fun talking about ADHD and emotional regulation.
Same. I had so much fun. Every time we've talked, I feel like we could have just kept going.
Absolutely. I know.
No, ever want to do it again? Let's go for it. I'm down.
Yeah. And the irony is it's ADHD, you know, attention span.
I know, right?
Yeah.
But that's the fun of it.
Absolutely. And I know people, if they really want to listen, they will find ways to make it work.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thanks a lot. And yeah, we'll definitely have to do this another time and discuss more.
All right. Great. Talk to you soon.
You bet. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Excuse My ADHD. If you like what you hear, don't forget to please subscribe, rate, and leave an awesome review. Show notes and social media links are available at www.excusemyadhd.com. Until next time.